Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Shukin here.
Oh my gosh.
With Todd Embley.
Hi.
And we have the guest of the century, Jacob.
Which just dissed all the
Rothman.
Other guests.
No.
Jacob Rothman from Platform 88.
Yeah, and he is really unique.
Yes.
Not true. Only is he one of the only people that I've ever met in China,
yep,
who runs a factory as a foreigner,
owns a factory even, yeah,
yep,
yep.
But he has so much experience and let's say insight into the design, manufacturing, product iteration world, yeah, that he can build anything, and he does it from the ground up in China.
Yeah, well, I mean, a guy who's been here 14 years.
Yeah.
You know, put aside his dreams. I learned a new word from him, rabbitical.
Yes.
He was going to go on a rabbitical, which apparently means you're going to on the path to become a rabbi.
Yeah.
Gave that up. Came to China 14 years ago with doing a trading company.
Mm-hmm.
Ends up going into owning a factory.
Yeah.
And then goes into, you know, some other things. But you know, also ends up creating Platform 88, which is brilliant. I mean, anybody, if you're doing anything hardware.
Yeah.
If you're staring a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo in the face, this is the guy that you need to talk to.
It's not just hardware. I mean, it's building any product.
Yeah. I mean, building anything. I mean, he does stuff for Loblaws. He does stuff for Canadian Tire. He does stuff for, you know, Walmarts and everybody else. And I mean, you know, his customer list goes on and on and on.
And it's so great because he gets into the details of the things that we would never even imagine.
Well, but that's the point. That's why people need him so much, because he's got all that deep understanding where you're coming out basically kind of an idiot, not knowing what you're going to get yourself into trying to get something manufactured in China. And then, you know, here's this shining light of Jacob Rothman, who's got all the answers and all the experience, and says, just let me carry you into the promised land and help you get this done properly.
Absolutely. Without further ado, let's let everybody get into that.
Okay. And enjoy. Okay, everybody, welcome to the next show here on China Startup Pulse. We are here with Jacob Rothman from Platform 88, as you know. Again, Ryan, why don't you give us a little brief background on Jacob?
So, really interesting. Jacob Rothman, there you go, I said it right, at Platform 88. He actually came, he actually came in 2002 to China and opened a trading company, his own startup. Called Smart Products, doing design-focused trading for products, helping them source and design all those kind of things. He ended up exiting that company, exiting it in 2008, and opening a factory in Yanjiang Province.
That's close.
Close enough, Yanjiang Province.
Sure.
Doing houseware. Province.
Well, it's Guangdong Province. It's Yanjiang City.
Yeah. And then houseware and kitchen tools. It's called the Vlong factory. And then in 2014, he started Platform 88 with Jason Wong from Razor Scooters. He was the managing director in China and Shanghai. And Platform 88 is amazing. It's a platform to help develop consumer products and help people launch new products, correct?
Yeah, I think that's a good description.
There we go.
Help Ryan out.
Help me out.
Put that in layman's terms.
Well, I'm probably the only person on your show that maybe would specialize or have a deep knowledge of making spatulas.
probably. Chances are high.
Right. So consumer products would be things that you use in the stores and buy on a daily basis, that, you know, from Walmart or Target or Sears or stores around the world, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you came out to do a trading company.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like something that a lot of people have done coming out here. The infamous trading company. Now, I mean, and is there getting a trading company? I mean, when you're looking to open up a business in China, and you're, you know, like, that seems to be one of the easiest things you can just do. It's like, I'm a consulting company or I'm a trading company.
Mm.
It seems kind of like something like that. But when you say doing a trading company, I mean, and I could be way off asking for, you know, a little bit of details, but what does that really mean? I hear that so much. I don't actually really know what a trading company means or does.
Well, I guess it could mean a lot of things. In some instances, there are commodities that people come over in really any category and just specialize in that. So if you were doing hammers, right, or tools for Home Depot, you would come over and just focus on hammers and tools, and you'd be trading. So, you know, i.e. a trading company.
But you're not trading. It's not like, you know, doing baseball cards and you're just trading.
No. Well, we are kind of trading. I'll give you one hammer and you'll give me $3 and we're trading something there.
Okay. So that experience, obviously, you're doing a trading company. Mm-hmm. But then you go out and get yourself just a factory. You decided to just grab a factory.
Well, there's a couple of trends. I've been here a long time. So together, I mean, I came here in my mid to early 20s. I'm in my early 40s now. And there's a couple major trends that have happened, at least for me in this career. And one of it is there were a lot of trading companies. You're right. But there's been a shift where retail stores around the world are more looking to buy from factories. And when I first started, trading companies, either in Hong Kong or in Taiwan, factories really needed and retail customers really needed Taiwanese or Hong Kong people or people from North America or around the world to sort of train up the factory to interface with the retailer. Mm. And that's in terms of product development. It's in terms of factory inspections and just sort of a basic business knowledge. But there's been a trend over the last 8 or 9 years where factories are really great on their own now. You've seen a lot of first run companies like Haier who are as good really as any major brand. And those were the first round of factories that, you know, competed on a global level against entrenched consumer products companies. But
so that's like both ends of it are actually trying to squeeze out the middleman to both, like the factories want to get more of you know, their price share, and then the buyers are actually trying to reduce costs or.
Well, they went through about 10 years of being run by Hong Kong or Taiwanese or foreign trading companies. Mm-hmm. And in the process of doing that, Chinese factories and people in general are extremely entrepreneurial and they became good themselves. Mm. So there's been a price compression over the last 10 or 15 years since I've been here. And the first round, like I was saying, of companies like Haier and Gree and other people like that, mm-hmm. They've already competed on the global level, but now a factory that is doing anywhere from $10 million to $20 million a year in revenue is expected to be as good as a company in the United States or Europe or around the world. So in that case, being a trading company, and like you introduced me, we were a design-focused trading company. So we had a really good team of designers, and we would try to do something different than you could get out of a factory. But even those types of more creative trading companies, a lot of them really fallen away. And so for me, a pivot in my career was to say, I'm going to take what I know about working and help get a factory trained up to that level and take out, like you said, the middleman.
Wow. I mean, that's absolutely incredible, because how many people do I know or have I ever met that have started and or have been able to run a factory like you say, that you're doing right now? And I have a question. Do you have any doubts during that time when you were running the factory or even getting started with it? I mean, you helping run this factory, design focus, something very new in the product. Yes, factory is booming in China during that time and still is. But like, what were some of the biggest challenges that you have faced?
Well, I would say just even today in the town Yangjiang where I'm focused and where the factory is based, it's still odd to see somebody from the United States, somebody, a non-Chinese person running a factory. So, and also making sure that my partner in the factory, because I don't handle day-to-day logistics and manufacturing. I more handle the product development and marketing and branding side of things. And I would say that, making sure there was a basic trust level there. A lot of people are concerned about relationships in China and trusting and making sure that both sides are taken care of. And, and it would be, I think, honestly, it would be the same in any country if you have somebody coming from one side and another side. And people have trouble in the United States, too, and around the world. But I was concerned about that, putting a lot of time, energy and financial investment and hoping that it would work out with my Chinese partner.
Yeah. Mm. Have you read Mr. China?
No, I haven't.
Do you know the story behind it?
No, tell me about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That to me would be like a very interesting book that you would read. It was written by Mr. China's kind of on the ground partner. So Mr. China was the guy from Wall Street, Liam, who came out. Yeah,
Liam, you're talking about the Highway 1 founder.
PCH. The guy who wrote it was Tim Clissold.
Right.
He's from Beijing. He's a British guy.
Okay.
And then it was the Wall Street guy who then had gone to Hong Kong and accomplished basically everything you'd need to accomplish. And then he ended up sinking something like 480 plus million into factories, including a beer factory that was they sold to Tsinghua. Oh. But it's a fantastic story around where they went and invested in factories.
Are you talking about the Irish guy, Liam, that started PCH and Highway 1?
I don't think so. It wasn't an Irish guy. It was an American.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he's called, the PCH founder is called Mr. China, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is the name of the book.
Okay. And I would like to be called Mr. China at some point, too.
Yeah.
I'm vying for the title.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like Highlander. There can only be one.
Maybe. And I think the founder of PCH is probably, going to win.
He's doing okay.
Yeah, he's all right.
But I don't know. Really interesting. I mean, because he details how they were trying to work with these factories and with the factory managers, and how these three specific, incidences over the dozens of factories they bought in getting into everything, investing, and then showing up 6 months later and realizing that there's zero brand new equipment in this factory that they own, but across the street, somebody else had actually just opened up a new beer factory. A brewery there
with all
brand new equipment, and nobody could explain where all the money had gone, and all the government things and stuff. So I recommend it as a great book that somebody should read, I think, before they come out here.
Definitely check a look at it.
But then something maybe a little bit interesting for you.
I bet you can fill a book, actually. I mean, your experiences from...
You must have a lot of things. I mean, I was just like, it can't all have been, sunshine and rainbows. Having something like this, there must have been a lot of things that you've learned or challenges you've overcome owning a factory.
Yeah, there are. Of course, there's some cultural differences. So at the factory, and not so much at Platform 88, because Platform 88 is mostly staffed by younger Chinese folks that have either been educated abroad or, the people in their 20s now in China are on par with people in the United States and Europe and around the world. But
in what sense?
Well, so if I compare, and I don't mean to be pejorative about this, but if I compare our team at Platform 88 in Shanghai, they're not a lot different from workers that or staff that we'd work with in San Francisco, where I'm originally from, or, other places. But at our factory, the education level of the staff that where we're from is a little bit different. There's a talent flight. When you're making when you're in a town that makes spatulas and butter knives, a lot of the people who are really good or want to be educated or get out, they leave, right? So what you're left with in small factory towns are, a kind of second rung of educated people. Yeah. And it's, it's just a different educational background. So it's a different approach after they graduate and come to work as well.
Man, that's a whole different part of China, not even a different approach. I mean, that is that whole experience. Because we talk about that's a tier three city, right?
I don't even know it's tier three.
Tier five.
Yeah, but I don't mean to show any disrespect to my new hometown of Yangjiang.
No, of course not. No disrespect. Right. Just saying how different things are and the approaches and the realities of working and doing business.
Like small town anywhere.
Yes, yeah.
It's going to have all the talent. It's not like the guy who can go pro in basketball is going to hang out. It's just you end up going where the money is. That's just the way it is.
Well, I mean, we're sitting here drinking cold brew coffee from the place around the corner, and there's no Starbucks in my tier three city, right? So if you're really, a lot of people leave these small towns. So what you're left with staff are people that, need some help in understanding how to communicate with people abroad. And it's where, again, a lot of these startups, the hardware startups that are coming over here, I don't think quite get it, right? Because they're communicating their expectation of not transparency on a ethical point of view, but the ability to put out an opinion and suggest and make sure that their opinion on what they know how to make a product is known, even though it's greater than the person coming over here to make the product. They're a little bit shy, and they're not really, especially in the schools that they're coming from, it's still more a bit of rote memorization, and you're not really encouraged to give an opinion. So if you can imagine what graduates into the workforce is, make some difficulties, but But in Shanghai, we're in this bubble where schools here are pretty good. And education has developed really quickly. So, you know, the people that we work with in Shanghai are pretty awesome. You know, they're fast and
Locals.
Yeah.
Not locals. Overseas return.
We have a mix of both, but locals too. Yeah. There's some great universities in Shanghai, as you know, and kids graduating out of there are pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So I have a question about your competitive advantage in owning a factory and how... Was it you being design focused that was something that was able to give you an edge and get you the contracts or what you needed to be successful? Or what do you think was the competitive advantage that you had?
I think it was a couple of things. It's still cost based. You can't get around that. Mm-hmm. We still have to make a butter knife for what other people make a butter knife for. And, you know, I'm being a little bit shy. We make more things than butter knives. We make electronics and other things in the factory. But
it's amazing electronic butter knife. You've never...
There is one, actually, a startup that did one that's heated and cuts butter, and it's really awesome. No, I'm serious. I love that stuff. Yeah, I mean, you have to be cost-based. That's the first thing, because you're a factory, right? And then the next thing is training a team or encouraging a team to give their opinions, to break through some cultural barriers that, you know, they're not typically... used to doing is part of the advantage. And then training a design team, taking my design team abroad, making sure that they see the market. These are some of the competitive things that I think as a factory owner that I've had to overcome.
Okay, I think that's a great spot for us to take a quick minute to go and thank our sponsors. And then when we get back, I really want to touch more and get more information about Platform 88, how you guys are doing innovation, what you guys are making, and how you're changing the model of investment and helping startups build incredible products.
That sounds great.
Hey everyone, we want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, PeopleSquared. PeopleSquared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, PeopleSquared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com.
All right, welcome back. Again, sitting here still with Jacob Rothman from Platform 88.
Okay.
And... we're going to, unfortunately, leave the factory talk. Ryan and I got a little caught up in that because we just find it so ultimately fascinating that somebody would actually own a factory of like 300, you know, employees and be making all kinds of barbecue equipment and all kinds of things. I know more about what you guys make. I don't want to say the names, even though we were just discussing it. Mm. But I don't know if that's a bad thing to talk about. So
no, that's fine. We could also talk about my failed rabbinical career if you'd like.
Rabbinical?
Yeah. Before I did any of this, I wanted to be a rabbi, and then I decided not to do it.
Out. Yeah. Was it because of Seinfeld or?
Oh.
No. my religious roots go deeper than Seinfeld. Not a whole lot. That's why I didn't become a rabbi, but
this is my favorite character on Seinfeld. He's just literally the best character.
They're
ever.
All Jewish, by the way.
Yes, yeah, I know. Yeah. But I mean, come on, that was a pretty brilliant character.
It was a brilliant character. I'm more of a George, though. So, no. So you know.
But we could keep on going on forever. But we want to learn more about how you transitioned and why you built Platform 88.
Well, for a lot of the reasons that we talked about in the first part of the show, people don't know these things. So they expect that the person on the other side of the email chain is going to suggest what they're supposed to suggest or provide the information that you're hoping they provide. And whether it's about materials or color or opening a mold, they don't really know that. Mm-hmm. You know, startups, when they're just getting going, they have a limited amount of funds. They have just enough money to open their first mold, and they have just enough money to pay for their first order. And I've seen so many people on Kickstarter and Indiegogo just completely...
And that can't go bad then.
In a heartbreaking way, lose all of the money.
It is. Tragic email you get back and saying, hey, We weren't able to cut the mold right. We weren't able to do this right. Our manufacturing never worked out. We're not going to be delivered.
It's true. I see so much of this stuff, and I'll back, and I have backed things, but I only back things, to be honest, that have gone through Hacks or Brink.
Yeah.
Because
that's a good plug there, Todd.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows we've done this a million times. They know Hacks is part of the family.
Sure.
But you know, that's just because they're here. They're in Shenzhen. They're in Hong Kong.
Sure.
And, you know, part of their expertise is helping them understand that, right? I mean,
I think the average time now that a Kickstarter fulfills is 8 months after.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and we, the formula for why a lot of them fail or delay, it's, you know, having been here for a while, it's clear to somebody like me who's, you know, been manufacturing and around China for a while, and it can be solved. And I think that's the reason we started Platform Media is because this can be solved. And, you know, so now I'm sort of like a startup rabbi.
Yeah, I love
it. Right. Tell me your problems. All right.
It's so good.
That's so good.
That was so well done.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that somewhere else.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
You have to be circumcised. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So moving on from that, unfortunately, because I like that line. Mm. Okay. So, how do people, I mean, how specifically are you kind of advertising your services and your wares? I mean, you know, is there an educational component? Are you, you know, is it on a pull marketing, push marketing? Are people just finding you because they desperately need help? Do you even have to go looking for customers?
Sure. Like any startup, we have to look for customers as well. And we're developing ways to do that. A lot of people reach us now. We're starting to have a following, and we've done quite a few startups and have helped a bunch of people. So, you know, people are finding us now. It's and in the beginning, when we first started, we sort of took any project that came because we were getting started. And now we're a little bit more selective in terms of who we try to help, whether it's the type of product or the category or how we feel their potential success will be, or a really basic thing, the personalities of the startups involved.
Okay, so you're saying things like the program. So how does it really work? Are you guys doing some type of investment or helping them with something? I mean, if I was to apply to Platform 88, what would that look like?
It's a little bit different from, say, Hacks or Boost or an accelerator, PCH, that does active investment. We're really a manufacturing company. From time to time, we use the different hubs that we have. We call them hubs. We have a hub in Hangzhou. We have a hub down in Yangjiang. We have a hub in Shanghai and in Shenzhen. And we use the experience of those places, whether they're in housewares or small electronics, you know, to help a startup. But somebody will come to us with a product typically, and we'll look at it and say, can we make it? And I know that sounds silly, but it's the, you know, more often than not, a deep dive into, can somebody really make it? Because the attitude in China is that anything can be made in 30 days, but never is, right? So we really take a deep dive into it, see if we can make it. And, you know, we get started with a startup.
You guys are helping bring all of these amazing ideas to life. For all these, either they are mostly entrepreneurs you're working with, or are they already established small companies?
Kind of a range. Some of them are established companies, medium-sized companies. A lot of them are startups or inventors. Yeah. Mm.
Are they coming to you with prototypes or just ideas or schematics or?
Well, we like to take a project when it's about 70 or 80% of the way down the road. And every startup thinks that they're almost ready to pull the trigger on molds, but they really typically aren't. And when we first started, we would take everything from a napkin sketch to, you know, a CAD-ready file. But the R&D process to bring almost any product to life is so iterative and so, I would say, difficult. It's not easy to bring a product to life that... unless the product and the startup has done a bunch of work beforehand, it becomes really difficult to do. So we like to take a project about 70, 80% to completion because really it's that 70 or 80% that makes it successful or fail. And the 0 to 70 is work that needs to be done on the startup side.
Is Platform 88, does it look, act, feel the same if it's based in the U.S.?
At some point in time, we thought about opening a branch in the United States. I'm a little bit critical of companies that do what we do, contract manufacturers or consulting companies that are only based out of the United States, because a product really doesn't make it unless it's localized at the factory that's going to do it.
Wow.
And that's, I think, a big gap. So you could go to a really great design company or engineering firm, even in Silicon Valley, and their knowledge base, even though it's vast in some cases, you know, it doesn't cut it until you're on the factory floor with the factory manager on a molding machine, making sure that what you want to do can be done. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's critical that we're here in China, that we're on the ground, that we're, you know, bridging that gap for people.
Because you're sitting down literally with the guys that are, you know, hands on making molds. Talking about whether it can be done. I mean, just the translation of the design to the physical mold, whereas somebody maybe in the valley, I mean, you might do the smoothest, slickest design in the world, but if it can't be understood at the factory level, if it can't be actually created at the factory level, then that all that amazing design is for naught.
Sure, and there are a lot of instances where a particular part might be really great when you're sitting in California, but unless it's in the manufacturing supply chain and used on a in a high volume way, it might be imported. It might be expensive. It might be inappropriate because it's the wrong part in the wrong for the wrong, you know, product. Mm-hmm. Not because it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, probably does, but it's because it's bought in the tens of thousands as opposed to the hundreds of thousands, and it's five times more expensive than it needs to be.
Has the world changed in manufacturing from the days of, you know, let's say even 10 years ago, when something you had even around the house in America would break or break down or fade or chip or something, and then you'd look at it, said made in China, and you go, oh, of course, made in China. That's why, you know, this mindset. You know, which leads me to also ask about, you know, what is the technology? How you know, what is the technology like here in manufacturing process in China today?
Well, I would say factories in general have pivoted, which is the reason why we started Platform 88 to begin with. So 10 years ago, everyone was willing and wanted to make things in the hundreds of thousands of pieces. Now you have a millennial culture of wanting to make specific products for specific needs in the best way possible. And factories know that now, and they're receptive to it. So when you come to factories with, you know, minimum order quantities of 1,000 or 2,000, in the past, factories would have blown you off. But now they're much more receptive because there's been a real shift in terms of how products are sold, what's wanted. And some of the things you're talking about, you know, is brand China. And when we were kids, Todd and I are a bit older, but when we were kids, Taiwan was junk. But now Taiwan is amazing.
Yeah. Right?
And China, when I first started, sure, it was a cheaper product, but you can get some amazing product out of China. And the factory base in general is now wanting to make products for this younger generation of people.
Yeah, I mean, and it just takes me to materials, you know, care and quality, craftsmanship, and technology and machinery being up to par with most of the, let's call them first world manufacturing places around the world. Would you say they're there?
For sure they're there if you have an intent to find the people to help you make it in that way. To give you an example, we are just finishing up a startup that's making a coffee grinder. Now, coffee grinders. Well, come by the office, I'll give you one. But this is a great team of a couple guys called Handground that launched on Kickstarter successfully and have literally spent more than a year focusing on every single detail of this coffee grinder. And when you use it, you'll see why. It's really nicely done. So they needed to find factories. They needed to find people who are willing to really sit down and focus on making a coffee grinder that met their needs and hopefully the needs of their customers when they start up.
Do you back companies on Kickstarter and Indiegogo?
Shh.
I was dying to ask that. I was just like, well, I mean, it's not like it's insider trading, but I mean, it just seems to me that you could look, you could just crawl Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and just go, nope, nope, nope.
Oh, there's a client.
Ah, these guys, they might be able to pull this off or something. You know, and it would just like, I would have a salesperson. Probably that's all they would be doing. Is just crawling Kickstarter and Indiegogo and just cold emailing them. And I'm just saying, looks like you got a pretty cool project or your product. Yeah. But I can already tell you that you're going to have this issue and this issue when you go to manufacturing, which you've probably already experienced. You may or may not want to check us out. We can help. And they might read that email and go, that's exactly the problems I'm having. That's creepy, but these guys obviously know what they're doing.
Well, if you look over your left shoulder, the lovely Una Choi.
That's right. Who's sitting with us right now?
It does exactly that for us. So
that's excellent.
Yes, we reach out to Kickstarters and Indiegogos all the time.
Yeah.
And
like, I'm surprised that Kickstarter doesn't just bring you in as an official partner. I'm imagining that Kickstarter could start having more resources to help people, even just like video. You know, for doing things, content producers or how to, you know, things like this, or even legal partners, if you want to go and, you know, register a company. I mean, they could start building out a little more robust, and then Platform 88 would be like the manufacturer in China partner.
Well, to be honest with you, Indiegogo is doing something like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so they started with Arrow Electronics for electronic products, and we've suggested that to them, and it's something that we've been talking about. When people come to our office in Hangzhou, they'll see there's for that specific type of product, which are housewares and smart water bottles and water bottles of any type and containers, that it's a good place to be.
Go ahead.
I have a question about the future of manufacturing, if this is a good place for it, because people are saying that manufacturing right now of certain types is leaving China. The cost is rising for employees and people are...
It's all going to Africa.
There's a migration happening. Is that real? Is that something people should be concerned about? Is that affecting the manufacturing in China at all? I don't really know if I should believe those things or not.
Well, there's a lot other manufacturing bases, including made in North America. And I said North America for you, Todd.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Sure, there's some products that are coming home, so to speak. There are some products that go to other parts of Asia and India, obviously, and Pakistan. And there's some, it's really commodity by commodity. Textiles has always followed where the least expensive labor is. For hard goods, things that you have to open a mold for, things that you need packaging for, boxes and clamshells and other things that go, that are not, maybe not the commodity, but next to, left or right of the commodity, there's still nothing better, in my opinion, than China. The infrastructure for making your product, packaging your product, and shipping your product, there's nowhere else in the world like China right now. I'm sure eventually it'll change. You know, when we were younger, it was Taiwan, and now it's China, and it'll probably go somewhere else. But for now, it's China.
A couple of quick ones before we close this out. What I thought was interesting and maybe worth noting for those who want to get in touch with you immediately, you said that you're factory agnostic, right? So even though you have your own factory, people listening should know that that's not necessarily going to be a part of your decision-making on where to help somebody get their manufacturing done.
Yeah, absolutely. We're what I mean by factory agnostic is our core mission at Platform 88 is to help people get to the right place and work with the right set of people. And if it's not my factory, or we have another co-founder as well who has a factory, two factories, but if it's not the right place, we won't take a product there. You know, we're not about manufacturing within our own ecosystem. We're about making sure that startups don't make bad decisions.
Wow.
Awesome. Okay. My second question, we were talking about, you know, made in North America or, you know, Taiwan or Africa or things like this. Do startups need to think about or be concerned about any kind of tariffs as far as being able to import or ship when it's made here versus at home on certain types of products? You would know this very well.
Absolutely. Every commodity has a specified tariff. So it depends on what it is, but it could be anywhere from a couple percentage points to 15 or 20 percentage points. And there are anti-dumping rules for commodities like furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So for sure, it's one of the things you have to calculate. And you have to calculate size of your product.
And you help them with these understandings?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of just...
Wow, these are things I would never think about.
Yeah. But if you're talking about a very, very large product, I mean, not only is it the cost of goods, it's also the cost of the freight. So if I can get one chair inside one container, it's going to be quite expensive. If I can get 100 chairs, it's going to be cheaper, which is why people make a decision potentially to manufacture in North America or in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Packaging. I'm just thinking about spatial usage of containers and things. And I know that generally a lot of this comes into, I mean, you want amazing packaging. You know, if you've got something tiny, you want to put it in a bigger package so that it looks more appealing, or that you paid for something more, you know, so it doesn't show up in a like centimeter cubed little box. But then also shipping. And then even in design things. So when it comes to packaging, this has got to be another part of the business that you guys maybe handle.
Yeah, of course. Help? We definitely help. And there's been a trend over the last several years. You're always balancing between wanting to present your product in the best way with the sort of ethical choice of saying, oh, gee, I'm wasting freight, I'm wasting oil, I'm wasting paper or plastic. And Walmart actually has really led the way in making sure that companies reduce the size of their packages so that they don't waste. And they, I was reading something recently about calculations. Mm. You know, Walmart isn't the awful, horrible juggernaut that people think it is. They do make good decisions, and they're not terrible to work with, but not at all.
Good.
So I think I was reading something about General Mills because of the, you know, the amount of cereal that's sold to Walmart. They worked with them to reduce the size of the package, and just that alone saved a tremendous amount of gas, a tremendous amount of shelf space and paper and the whole thing. And because of their volume, it's staggering what they could do.
Yeah.
So it's always a balance between, you know, wanting to display your product and wanting to make ethical choices.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right, we got to wrap this up. Jacob, thank you ever so much, for getting on the show. It took us a while to land you when you catch you back in Shanghai, but I really appreciate you making the time to come down here and do the recording with us. Right. Much appreciated. How can people get in touch with you? Plug time.
Oh, right. So Platform 88, www.platform88.net, not .com. .net.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Sure. We'll let them peruse and find their way through the site from there. Great. Thank you very much. You know, thanks to Vivian, our producer, and David, our sound producer, on the back end. Mm-hmm. And thanks to our sponsors, China Accelerator and People Squared, and to our syndication partner, Technode. Thank you all very much for listening. We really appreciate you. And thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed.